Members of parliament in the Democratic Republic of Congo overwhelmingly passed an amnesty bill last week for rebels in the country's eastern Kivu provinces. Set to be signed into law by President Joseph Kabila, the amnesty would absolve, quote, acts of war committed since 2003, but would not be extended to those accused of committing war crimes. To that end, the detained former leader of the National Congress for the Defense of the People, Laurent Nkunda, would not be eligible for amnesty. Arrested in late January, Nkunda has been detained in Rwanda while the Congolese government is negotiating to have him extradited. Despite these developments, the International Committee of the Red Cross is still reporting serious difficulties in delivering humanitarian aid to the northern Kivu province, citing ongoing instances of murder and rape in the conflict between the Congolese government and the Democratic Liberation Forces of Rwanda. In the U.S. media, reporting on the violence in Congo, which has claimed more than 5 million lives since 1996, has been neglectful at best. According to research just published in the latest issue of Extra, the magazine of the media watchdog group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, only one segment on the Congo has aired on the CBS Evening News in the past 5 years. Well, joining us on the line this morning is Kumbale Musavuli, who is a spokesperson and student coordinator with Friends of the Congo, and Julie Holler is managing editor of Extra, the magazine of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Welcome to Uprising, Kumbale and Julie.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having us.
Kumbale, let me start with you. The death rate is extremely high. I understand we're talking about thousands of people being killed per month, this is something that is worse than many other conflicts happening around the world. Can you explain a little bit or give us some more statistics about how serious the war is in Congo right now?
As you stated, you know, 1,500 people die every day in the Congo, and the Congo has been dubbed as the worst conflict since World War II, where nearly 6 million people have died, half of them children 5 years old and younger. And mainly, all these deaths and atrocities taking place in the Congo is due to the scramble for Congo's mineral resources and the resources that we use in our everyday life, gold, diamond, oil, and coltan, one of the key minerals, but not the only mineral living in the Congo, but coltan has been essential to modern technologies used in virtually every electronic device. As you see the boom in modern technology, and you see the death taking place in the Congo, we see many millions of people dying, yet the world is silent, yet most of the media, the mainstream media, does not cover what's taking place. So the challenge now is to get it to the world, to the people, because I honestly believe if people knew that 3 million children under the age of 5 died because of the resources they use every day, there would be outrage. If people knew that 6 million people somewhere in the world, in the center of the continent, were dying because of the resources that we use every day, there will be outrage.
Now, are the deaths directly a result of fighting over the resources, or are they an outcome of the neglect of the international community?
Actually, it's both. There are direct conflict as well as conflict-related causes, as the international rescue community stated with their report they published a few years ago. Saying that the 5.4 million people have died since 98, and remembering that the conflict in the Congo actually started in 96. But as we see that, and we see this cancer right in the center of the world, we know it's essential for all of us to help end it. As President Obama stated 3 years ago, if Africa has to achieve its promises, resolving the conflict in the Congo will be critical. So we know it's essential that we stop this conflict, and we know what are the warring parties, we know what forces are against the Congo, and if we apply the right pressure, this conflict will end tomorrow. As I can mention a few things, Canada, Sweden, and Netherlands, these three countries applied the right pressure on the two negative forces on the Congo, Rwanda and Uganda. And in January, we saw the changes of how the conflict is going toward an end, where the rebel facts have been demobilized. And we see now with the latest amnesty that's been passed and are trying to resolve the conflict. So we know when we put pressure on the Congo, international pressure on the Congo, we save lives. And we hope the United States and Great Britain will do the same thing, since they are allies to Rwanda and Uganda, by putting the right pressure to save lives. Because if Congo is definitely saved and the conflict ends, we can all of us can enjoy about the potential of the Congo, providing the electricity to the whole continent, feeding the whole population of the world until 2050. So we know this is a scar to the human conscience not to address the worst conflict since World War II.
Kumbale Musavuli is my guest. He's a spokesperson and student coordinator with Friends of the Congo. Julie Haller is also with us. She's managing editor of Extra, which is the magazine of fairness and accuracy in reporting, which just published a detailed piece of research about the way in which the mainstream media here in the United States covers the Congo. Julie, there's been, of course, a lot of attention paid to the conflict in Darfur, and it has been named a genocide. Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times has been a particularly sort of crusading journalist, if you will, on the issue with Darfur. But why the silence on Congo, and how silent really is the media?
Well, as you pointed out in the introduction, CBS Evening News played one segment on the Congo in the last 5 years. They were the worst offender, but the best of the three broadcast nightlies, ABC, played an average of less than two segments per year over those 5 years. So it's really, I mean, in television, it's much worse than in print. But even in print, we looked at the New York Times coverage of the Congo, and if you compare that to Darfur, again, to try to wrap your head around the size of the conflict in the Congo, we know that more than 5 million, at this point it's probably more than 6 million, to be honest, people have died. This is 10 times more, or up to 20 times more, the number of people who have died in Darfur. Not to minimize the conflict in Darfur, but when you're talking about scale, the Congo really dwarfs Darfur.
I want to quote Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times that you cite in your research. He says, when comparing or when justifying his coverage of Darfur, he says, "I grant that the suffering is greater in Congo, but our compass is also moved by human evil, and that is greater in Darfur. There's no greater crime than genocide, and that is Sudan's specialty." Why is this problematic, Julie?
Well, the word genocide is obviously very loaded, and it does come with this idea of this great weight of morality. When Kristof says that Darfur is so different from the Congo in that regard, he's basically just lying. This is not true. We don't the United Nations. They actually have investigated both situations to some extent. They determined, the UN decided that what was happening in Darfur was not genocide. This is disputed by some, but the UN has said that it is not a genocide. When they investigated what happened in the Congo in the mid-90s, they said that there was potentially genocide that had happened. They were unable to continue their investigation because of lack of access, but the idea that what has happened in Darfur is qualitatively much worse or more quote unquote evil than what has happened in the Congo is simply a false argument.
Kumbale, let's talk about the current news. I'd mentioned about the amnesty law that is set to be signed by the president of the Congo. What bearing does that have on the current conflict, and why is there a difference between acts of war versus war crimes?
The amnesty that has been placed, I see that as a political game that's taking place. Even though that is going to bring some type of stability for the moment to be able to alleviate the suffering of the people in the East, when you look at the history of the Congo for the past 12 to 15 years, you will see many, many peace accords written, and most of them were broken. You know, right now we have Jean-Pierre Bemba, who is right now being tried over in Hague. And we remember that he also had amnesty. He had to from the government, so he could be in the transitional government. So we know all this taking place is just a political game taking occurring in the Congo to alleviate the suffering. But the challenge, even for the rebel that was not in amnesty, Laurent Kunda, is to understand the global history of what's taking place. We have proxy forces in Congo who are sent from years to years to create chaos.
From where are they sent?
They are definitely proxy forces from Rwanda. Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
It's been
and Uganda.
Documented by the United Nations. There have been 5 reports. And the latest changes that we're seeing now, we are confident, is because of the last report the United Nations published on December 2008, where it described how the Rwanda government has been complicit in sending child soldiers on the front, sending in military uniform that came from Boston, Massachusetts, and so on and so forth. So we know where the forces against the Congo are coming. And after years, if we do not have a regional solution to what's taking place, this is going to go on. And we know already what has worked, as I mentioned earlier. And as you just mentioned about Sudan and Congo, surprisingly, Congo borders the Sudan. So we have Congolese refugees inside Sudan right now as we're speaking. And if we are not finding a solution for Sudan, for Congo, for Rwanda and Uganda, 5 years from now, I will be on your radio show speaking about the same thing. And the reason why there have been a conspiracy of silence, as I've stated, is because of the level of people who are directly connected to the Congo, to the highest level of government. Perfect example, Samuel Badman,
mm-hmm.
the Secretary of Energy of George W. Bush, his company was listed as one of the 85 companies illegally receiving coltan from the Congo. And you have more company, OM Group. You have HC Stock out of Germany.
There was a news article recently, Kumbale, about a Belgian company, Traxys, that has decided to suspend its sourcing of materials and minerals, rather, from the Congo, and over the issue of the war, and it's trying to sort of distance itself from being connected with that. Do you see that as a positive sign, and is that the direction that the international community needs to take in its role to help stop this violence?
Definitely. I mean, as you just mentioned, Traxys.
Mm-hmm.
Traxys was listed in 2002, and they are halting their operation on June the 1st of this year. So think about all this time of the minerals they have received. There are things that people could do, and you have to also know there are 4 forces against the Congo. We have our local elite. We have foreign corporations that we know. You have to look at the UN reports. Some of them are listed on our website, friendsofthecongo.org. We have foreign government, which are directly stated, Rwanda and Uganda, using proxy forces, and sometimes they invaded twice the Congo in 96 and 98. And you have multilateral institutions, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, who unleashed their power to put pressure on the Congolese. So as those 4 forces against the Congo work in cahoot, the Congolese people are the ones suffering. So what the people around the world can do to help the freedom fighters inside Congo to be able to regain their sovereignty, they could put the international pressure, as I mentioned, specifically for the United States. We just have the new Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Johnny Carson, and there will be a hearing next week on sexual violence in Congress. People should contact the State Department to hold corporations, American corporations, accountable for what they are doing in Congo, such as company as Freeport-McMoRan.
I want to turn back to Julie on this issue of just information. I mean, Kumbale just broke it down very clearly about what are the main forces that are fueling this war. But ordinary Americans just don't get this information when they listen to the mainstream media. And you know, Anderson Cooper, in your research, you show that Anderson Cooper of CNN did 44 shows that covered the Congo, but the majority of his shows were not about the political conflict. What were they about?
Well, many of them were about the political conflict, but more than half of them also included a focus on the guerrillas in the Congo. Or there was also a long interview he did with Angelina Jolie that was broadcast several times, where the Congo was mentioned briefly. And this is something that happens to Africa coverage frequently, where the coverage that you do get, it's almost like it's required to have a hook that is either around endangered animals or celebrities. I think when you're looking at Congo coverage, one of the main reasons that the Congo does not get coverage right now in the United States is that it's not in the interest of the U.S. government at the moment to have a spotlight on the Congo. When you look at Darfur in 2004, I believe it was, Colin Powell and the Bush administration called that conflict a genocide. This was a deliberate effort by the administration to bring more attention to it, and that's the year that the U.S. media started paying attention. If you look since 1998, there's been no effort by administrations, U.S. administrations, Republican and Democratic alike, to draw any attention to the Congo, and you haven't seen the coverage in the U.S. media.
And is there also a sense of people having Darfur fatigue, if you will, to call it, you know, a very crude term? But
I'm inclined to think that's not the case. I'm inclined to think that you know, there actually has been some recent efforts to connect the Darfur conflict and the Darfur activism and Congo activism. I think, if anything, Darfur may be helping to bring more attention to the Congo. It's hard to say. I don't know that there really is so much Darfur exhaustion or that sort of thing.
I want to finally turn back to Kumbale Musavuli. Can you tell us about a speaking tour that is going to take place this summer, the Breaking the Silence speaking tour?
Yes, actually it's been going on since February, and we are still on the Break the Silence tour. And what we have decided to do is to go to the American communities here in the U.S., and we want to talk to the Americans and to let them know what's taking place. And we are going across college campuses around the world, and it's amazing to see what the students are doing. About a month ago, a student in Osaka, Japan, actually organized a photo exhibit for the Congo. And you know what was very interesting? As a Congolese, for me to see Japanese at the side of the Congolese, is that the uranium that was used to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki came from Congo. But in today's world, they were right beside the Congolese. So we are going across college campuses, and we want people to visit our website, congoweek.org, to sign up and invite us. So we will be able to tell them what are the best ways to help, because the challenges of the Congo are both internal and external. But as regular people around the world, we want you to be able to help. As our independence hero stated, Patrice Lumumba, in 1961, before he was assassinated, he stated, "We are not alone. Africa, Asia, and free and liberated people from every corner of the world will always be found at the side of the Congolese." And we believe in that. That's why we want to get to the American people. We want to get to the people of the world so they can know what's taking place in the Congo and what informative action they can take to end the conflict, so we can all benefit from the potential of a peaceful Congo, as I stated.
Well, I want to thank the two of you very much for joining us today, Kumbale Musavuli and Julie Haller. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Kumbale Musavali is a spokesperson and student coordinator with Friends of the Congo. Their website is friendsofthecongo.org. If you want to find out about the Break the Silence tour that Kumbale just talked about, you can find out more at congoweek.org. That's congoweek.org. And you can read FAIR's research on the lack of media coverage on the Congo at their website, fair.org, F-A-I-R.org. If you missed any of this, not to worry, just go to our website, kpfk.org/uprising after 10 a.m. today. All the links will be up.